May it please the court, Daniel Adler on behalf of Mr. Garcia. I'd like to reserve, if possible, 5 minutes for rebuttal. This is the case with two consolidated appeals, one immigration and one Bivens. I'd like to start with the Bivens appeal. The most important point is this one. Mr. Garcia really isn't asking for much. The district court summarily denied his request to proceed in forma pauperis and dismissed his case as frivolous. The question for this court is whether that dismissal was appropriate. And that's a legal question that this court reviews de novo. The bar for affirmance here is exceptionally high. It must be beyond doubt that the complaint is meritless and that no amendment could cure its defects. The complaint must also be liberally construed, especially because it was written pro se. As a result of this standard, the court routinely reverses summary dismissals at the IFP stage. And I would direct the court's attention to cases like Rodriguez versus Steck and Goody versus INS. And the upshot of those cases is that if there's any basis in law and fact for the claim, or if there's any basis to suppose that the plaintiff could allege facts that would survive dismissal, then a case has to be reversed and sent back to the district court for a full airing out there, as opposed to a summary dismissal and affirmance here. This case is in fact like those cases because Mr. Garcia has already stated, or at the very least could possibly state in a future complaint, a good Bivens claim. He's pleaded a prejudicial interference with his constitutional right of meaningful access to the courts. There's an extensive body of case law recognizing that right, dating all the way back to Ex parte Hull in 1941, which prohibited the interception or confiscation of legal materials by a prison officer when they were en route to a court. This court has held more recently in cases like Silva that prisons can't interfere with the right of access to the courts by, for example, transferring prisoners around and frustrating their ability to bring claims. And
the real problem here in Bivens is the vast contraction of Bivens in general in recent years. But there's, so it may well be that this isn't going to make it as a Bivens claim. But the problem is that that is kind of a novel issue. No one's looked at it in Bivens. There's no Bivens case saying you couldn't have a Bivens action like this, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
In the long run, you can't. But that's the long run.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead.
So to pick up on what Your Honor is saying, there are different ways that you could dispose of this case and rule for Mr. Garcia. On the one hand, you could have a very simple ruling along the lines of Rodriguez versus Steck that says simply, this case isn't frivolous. We're not going to say more about it, but we know that it's not frivolous. It's not clearly foreclosed by any authority. You could also go one step further and say, here's the reason why it's not frivolous, because there's a clearly established right to meaningful access to the courts, and that a model for that sort of opinion would be something like Rizzo versus Dawson. And then there's a third route that you could take, which would be the most expansive of all, and that would be addressing all of the secondary issues that the district court would need to address on remand, such as, are there special factors counseling hesitation about recognizing a Bivens remedy? So the court doesn't have to go all the way down that road. It certainly could, but at the very least, I think the court should issue a summary reversal saying that we know that this isn't frivolous. There's a lot more to be said here, and the district court should say it in the first instance. So, as I was saying, Mr. Garcia has stated a claim here, a claim to right of access to the courts, and it's far better than frivolous. The basic claim is this. He was in ICE detention. Yes?
Is that claim under the Fifth and Sixth Amendment, or should it be under the First and 14th Amendments?
I think it's First and 14th, Your Honor. It's the Due Process Clause and the First Amendment right to petition the government for redress of grievances.
So you would want him to be able to amend this complaint to more expressly state the nature of his claim.
I think that's right, Your Honor. I think it could, the complaint could be fairly read as it's currently pleaded to already state a Bivens claim, but I certainly wouldn't be opposed to instructions to give Mr. Garcia an opportunity to amend on remand.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. You were saying.
I have a factual question.
Yes.
As to his claim that they should have let him go to the state court, I have two factual questions. is it right that he wasn't asking this facility or ICE to transport him to the jail, to the court? He was asking them to let him out the door to get into a sheriff's car to take. Was the sheriff for some reason going to take him to the court? How is he going to get to the court?
It's not clear from the complaint, Your Honor, and I think either could be fairly read, and that brings up a larger question of what sort of claim this is. This court's decisions in cases like Silva in particular has drawn a distinction between what they call affirmative access cases on the one hand, or affirmative assistance cases, and interference cases on the other. So if he's saying that ICE should have transported him all the way to the courthouse, that would be a kind of affirmative assistance case, like Bounds versus Smith. Please give me a law library. Please transport me. I don't think you have to read the complaint that way. I think the more logical reading is what you just mentioned, this idea that they probably just needed to open their gates and have the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department transport him to court, because that's exactly what would have happened if he were in county lockup. The Sheriff's Department, and this ICE facility, to be clear, is in San Bernardino County. So really, it's an interference claim in the sense that all ICE was being asked to do was open its gates and transfer a detainee.
Exactly, know that, which is another reason the complaint should be amended.
So exactly right.
Here's a bigger question. He, as I understand it, he eventually got out of ICE detention, and he did eventually prosecute tried to get his state conviction vacated, and he failed. He went all the way to California Supreme Court. Is that right?
That's correct.
So what's his damages?
So the issue is that he tried under a novel procedural mechanism, which is Penal Code Section 1473.7. His earlier motion was different procedurally. It was under Penal Code Section 1018. And the reason why there could still be damages, notwithstanding the later denial of his argument under 1473.7, is that we know his 1018 motion was actually granted. That's in the record at ER 70. The Superior Court actually granted his motion to withdraw his plea, his guilty plea, which was the only predicate for his removal order. And
it was the notion is that if that first time he'd been there, he would have gotten vacated.
That's exactly right. And he alleges in his complaint that the only reason why the order withdrawing his guilty plea was subsequently rescinded or vacated was that he wasn't personally present in the courtroom. And there's some support for that in the record, in the minutes from the court itself. And there's also support in California case law, because Section 1018 itself and cases interpreting it, like Johnson versus Superior Court, they squarely provide that he had to be personally present in the courtroom to withdraw his guilty plea.
So what is his status now?
His status now is that he is out on bond. He's been out on bond for a few years now. He spent approximately 5 years in ICE detention before finally securing a bond hearing. And I think he's on an ankle monitor at home.
And he has an order of removal against him.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Based on a since withdrawn guilty plea.
Well, the guilty plea was not withdrawn. He successfully withdrew it for just a moment before it was reinstated literally the next day, all the way back in 2013.
Oh, because he didn't personally appear.
Correct.
Are there any pending proceedings? There was some suggestion that there's another attempt to vacate this. Is that right, or is that over with?
There are no pending proceedings to vacate or withdraw his conviction.
So what is the remedy you're arguing for in the immigration case?
Yes, I'll turn to that briefly. And the argument there is really a simple one. It's that the BIA committed legal error in concluding that he didn't support his motion to reopen with evidence, because he did support his motion with evidence in the form of a declaration, which was all that he was required to submit. And so the argument is that because the BIA committed legal error, we just don't know whether it would have taken the opportunity to exercise its sua sponte discretion to reopen his proceedings and provide him with relief. And so I think the court should remand to the BIA under Bonilla, because the decision was infected with legal error. And to be sure, if the BIA comes back and says we declined to exercise our sua sponte discretion to reopen, then that decision would not be reviewable. But this decision is.
But in light of the fact that the conviction has definitively not been vacated, it's not going to do any good, right? He has a conviction that precludes his relief.
So he does have a conviction that precludes his relief. And the problem, of course, here is that we're talking about different timelines, right? I mean, when he brought this claim originally, he was still sitting in Superior Court and sitting in ICE detention and trying to get to Superior Court to withdraw his conviction. Now it's unclear whether he'll be able to do that. I can't say definitively that he doesn't have any means of doing that in the future, but right now he does not have any pending motions to withdraw or vacate his conviction.
So whatever mistake the board may have made in characterizing this statement of his, it doesn't make any difference at this point.
Well, I'm not sure it's right to endorse a harmless error principle here, Your Honor. And I would point the court in the direction.
It isn't in general with regard to, but this is a kind of misstatement in the sense that they did consider the statement. They just said it was in his brief when it was really in a declaration.
Well, in addition to that, Your Honor, in the very same footnote, they say that he submitted no evidence. So I think they sort of said it twice. They didn't just describe it as a brief, which if perhaps that were all that were the case here, there wouldn't be much of an argument. But they also said there's no evidence. And so I think it's pretty clear that they made a legal error in that sense. And to the extent that in reviewing an administrative decision, the court is stuck with the grounds that are stated in the decision, it could be a scenario where it makes sense to send it back just to correct that legal error, even if the court is fairly certain that it's not going to change the result. And I see that I have only a few minutes left. I'll answer your question, of course. Yes.
Well, this is just one of those cases where it seems like you just want to unwind the whole thing because it's one mess up after another in terms of how, I mean, if you unwind, you can see this case rewind with him getting to go, withdraw his conviction and not being in this particular predicament at all. And I'm just wondering, what are the next steps for him to try to unwind what has happened?
I think that's right, Your Honor. This case certainly could have gone very differently if only he had been transported in the first instance, or to be more specific, made available for transport, which is why I think he does have a good Bivens claim, that things might well have gone differently, and a jury could certainly so conclude. As far as exactly how practically this should go, I confess I'm not entirely certain because, as you say, he does not have a pending motion. That doesn't foreclose the possibility of a future motion. It also doesn't foreclose the possibility that the BIA, in exercising its supervisory capacity, could in some way grant him relief. I just don't know what could happen in the BIA. All I do know is there's a legal error.
It probably does foreclose a future motion because it would be res judicata essentially. I mean, there were findings made about, we don't actually have the state proceedings, but I wouldn't mind seeing them, but it's my understanding from something that was said somewhere that the finding was that he did not in fact have an effective assistance of counsel. That's going to be the end of it. So I could be able to redo that.
Understood, Your Honor. But to be clear, I think at least with respect to the Bivens claim, that does not change the fact that he was successful.
Right, but the Bivens claim is going to get him to stay in the country.
Correct.
Get him some money if he's sent back somewhere else, theoretically, right?
Correct.
It is. I mean, I share Judge Wortman's sense that, there's really no way we ultimately fix this.
I ask a question, please?
Yes, Your Honor.
It sounds to me like that, talking about unwinding this and everything, that really your remedy that you're really seeking is a remand to allow him to plead a proper Bivens action. Am I missing something there?
Well, Your Honor, there are two different appeals here, one of which is the Bivens appeal and the other is the immigration appeal. So in theory, the court could remand both to the district court on Bivens and to the BIA on the immigration appeal. So that's how that would look. At the very least, I agree that the Bivens claim should be remanded to the district court so that it can decide it in the first instance rather than summarily dismissing it. And then further, I would argue under Bonilla that the case should be remanded to the BIA, notwithstanding our inability at present to see exactly how it might shake out in the future and yield him some relief.
One last point is the district court treated this as if we're under the PRLA. I assume it isn't. Is that correct? It's not.
That's correct. It's not, Your Honor, because he was not a prisoner within the meaning of the PLRA. He was instead a civil detainee. So the three strikes analysis, if you can call it that, the checked box was incorrectly checked, and that would not be a basis for denying him relief or providing a black mark on his name in any way.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Niemann-Kelting.
Good morning, Your Honors. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. May it please the court, Melissa Niemann-Kelting for the Acting Attorney General. Mr. Garcia has not shown that the board erred in denying his motion to reopen as untimely. His sole claim is that the board did not consider his declaration as evidence. But this puts form over substance, where he cannot show that there's any claim that the board overlooked. Indeed, the board specifically addressed his assertions about his pending state criminal court action and reasonably concluded that it could not discern what effect, if any, those pending proceedings had on his final order of removal. Because Mr. Garcia has not demonstrated any legal error, this court should deny the petition for review. Here, I think it's important to note, Your Honors, that as was discussed earlier, that even though we now have the benefit of a crystal ball to see the end result of what happened with Mr. Garcia's state collateral attack, we can look at the pocket of time when the board denied the motion to reopen and discern that there is no legal error in its conclusion. It's not a question here of doubting Mr. Garcia's veracity. Rather, it was simply insufficient for him to meet his reopening burden, where all he asserted was that his state criminal proceedings remained pending. And without more, there was nothing for the board to do.
And so here, can you explain to me, I mean, it looks really bad to me that ICE used transcripts to his hearing so that he could withdraw his guilty plea. What is the basis for ICE refusing to do that? I mean, ICE would not cooperate with the state court proceedings in this case? I mean, I don't understand it.
I appreciate Your Honor's frustration. As far as the petition for review, the record does not elaborate on the facts underlying Mr. Garcia's requests to be transported to the state court, either to quash his bench warrant or to withdraw his guilty plea.
The answer to his grievances were generic. We do not send people to court, period. That's what the grievance responses were. And I find it rather shocking as well. I'm not sure it's your problem exactly, but it seems to me something that cries out for being fixed. It's really, this was a private facility too, I know. And I don't know who is making these decisions, but there are two grievances in the record in which, let's see if I can find them.
I have one at ER 47 where there's a signature and a name of someone saying, you will not be transported until
another one. And there's another one that says, we, generically, we do not facilitate transport to court here, period. Didn't say anything about his circumstances. We just don't do it.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. I respectfully would note that those documents, while in the excerpt of proceeding for Mr. Garcia's case appeal, those were not submitted to either the Immigration Court or the Board of Immigration Appeals. So the agency had no opportunity.
It's not your problem. You're the agency standing up here who's representing.
I'm the face. I understand.
I mean, you are representing the entity that is responsible for this, even if not in your case. So it's really fairly outrageous.
I can understand the court's frustration with the facts of this case.
This case is so Kafkaesque. I mean, I hate to use that word. It's almost, I don't know, it's maybe used too often. But this is really a bad spiral of circumstances here, because but for that, he would have been able to withdraw his guilty plea, and then he wouldn't be subject to an order of removal and in home detention with an electronic bracelet on his ankle. It just seems like this is just 180 degrees the wrong result here. And the actions seem very inexplicable.
Respectfully, Your Honor, while he may have been able to withdraw his guilty plea, we don't know beyond, we have no way of knowing that what would the outcome would have been, even if he had been able to do that, where he it wasn't that the conviction was vacated or that the prosecution was going to drop the prosecution and no longer charge Mr. Garcia. He was in fact charged under 1351 with possession for sale of heroin, and he did sign a plea agreement that he pled guilty and understood the ramifications that accepting that plea would have on his status in this country. And we don't know, because we don't have a crystal ball going the other way, if that had come to fruition and he had been able to withdraw that plea, we don't know what would have happened. It's not a foregone conclusion that he would no longer be subject to any ground of removability.
Let me ask you this, counsel. What do you think the recourse should be then in this case, if any?
This may be an unfortunate case where there is no satisfying recourse for Mr. Garcia. Speaking solely from his immigration perspective, it is true that he remains and stands convicted of a controlled substance conviction that is also deemed to be an aggravated felony, which does stand in his way as far as any long-term relief or adjustment in this country. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm just going to say, how about an amendment to the complaint to allow him to plead maybe a proper Bivens action? I mean, he may not get satisfaction there, but he could get satisfaction maybe in dollars.
If this court determines that he has a case to amend his complaint, then certainly it is free to remand for him to do so. But that is a separate piece, obviously, from the immigration petition that we're discussing.
Yes.
But I appreciate the unsatisfactory nature.
Do you think that the BIA would be interested in mediating this, or is it just too late because of the criminal conviction?
Well, at this point, Your Honor, certainly if this panel were interested in the parties exploring opportunity to mediate, the government, I have no objection to that. What long-term result, I couldn't speculate here, as Mr. Adler also acknowledged, but certainly if the court were interested in the parties taking time to explore that opportunity in light of the new priority enforcement memo, that is certainly something the government would be willing to do.
Yeah, sympathies with him. I mean, he's been in the United States over 25 years. His mother, wife, and 5 children are U.S. citizens. Other than this one conviction, he seems to have been law-abiding, and the circumstances of the conviction seem, maybe it would have been prosecuted, who knows what would have happened. But I agree with you on that. We can't really know what would have happened, but just the current equities seem, it's a very frustrating case, I would say.
I understand that, Your Honor.
Let me go back to the BIA, the legal error claim in regards to this matter.
Yes, Your Honor.
You say that they did consider the fact that that he submitted the claim that he was saying that he did. What proof do you have from the record that shows that the BIA did consider the possibility of a legal error there?
Well, Your Honor, I would backtrack a little, and I'll answer in 2 parts. The first direct answer to your question is that they quoted specifically from his declaration. They quoted the facts that he asserted that his, and this is at AR3 of the certified administrative record. They quoted the fact that he did have a grant of his motion to withdraw his guilty plea and that that grant was later vacated. So we know that they looked at the declaration. What's important to remember, and if you go to the declaration itself, Your Honor, he submitted multiple copies that all said more or less the same thing. The final copy he submitted on July 7th is at AR-10. And he did assert that his motion was to withdraw his guilty plea was granted. It was later withdrawn because he was deemed a fugitive because, and notably, he faulted the state court, the state district attorney, and his public defender for failing to call him before the Superior Court, and acknowledged that those proceedings were still pending. So the board was confined to look at the information that Mr. Garcia submitted, which was his motion itself, which primarily argued that an intervening change in law resulted in his conviction no longer constituting an aggravated felony. That was his primary argument. If the board had said nothing else, we might be having a different conversation. But here we have this footnote where they quoted specifically the assertions that he made in his declaration and reasonably concluded they couldn't discern what effect the pending proceedings had on his final order of removal. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, by the way.
You're welcome. If the court has no further questions, I would respectfully ask that find that the board did not commit any legal error in denying Mr. Garcia's motion to reopen as untimely and deny the petition for review. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Alder, I'll give you another minute or so.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll keep it brief. So the first thing I want to mention is that we would absolutely take up the government's offer to put this into mediation. Perhaps one way to resolve this would be to remand to the BIA on the basis of the legal error under Bonilla, with the possibility or instructions that the case should be mediated, which we would be happy to do. In addition, I just want to point out that the BIA did have in front of it Mr. Garcia's motion to withdraw his plea, and that was at the AR 338 in the record. So the BIA had in its own administrative record everything it needed to see that he was trying to attack the very conviction that was the basis of his guilty plea. And my final point is, Judge Wardlaw, I just wanted to echo your comment about ER 47. I actually have in my own notes the word Kafkaesque, because that sentence, the idea that you will be transported, you will only be transported after your appeal is denied, suggests that the BI, that ICE is willing and able and ready to transport its detainees, but only at the point where it will no longer matter. And that's why we think that this case is a suitable candidate for a Bivens remedy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Garcia versus Wilkinson is submitted. Thank you again for the excellent pro bono arguments. We will take up San Joaquin County Employees Retirement Association versus Travelers Casualty Insurance Company.